Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, your health connection from KSKA Anchorage, Alaska. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. It's been said that if you don't know where you're going, it's particularly hard to get there. So if your destination is population health, then it helps to know that the health of a population is dependent on a number of factors. One, your genetics, your socioeconomic class, your environment, your behavior, and healthcare. Surprisingly, healthcare is a minor contribution to the overall health of a population. Behaviors, however, are very strongly associated with health and can be assessed, and this leads to an understanding understand the assessment of how we can best use our limited resources to improve the overall population of health. The Youth Risk Behavioral Surveillance Survey, YRBS, is one instrument that's been used to understand behaviors in teens. Today's program will review some of the most recent YRBS results and efforts in the Alaska and Anchorage community to address some of these concerns. My guests today are Sarah Sledge. She is Director of Education Operations for the United Way. Thomas Azzarella, he's director of the Alaska After School Network. Dr. Gabe Garcia, he's associate professor of public health at UAA in the Department of Health Sciences. And Deborah Williams, executive director of the Anchorage Youth Development Coalition. We did a program like this two or three years ago. This is basically an update of where we have been and what we're finding and some of the results that help us understand whether we're making any impact on teens' behavior and consequently their health, particularly and surprisingly, their lifelong health. During this program, you can reach us with your questions and comments in a couple of ways. In Anchorage, you can call us at 550-8433. We have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752, and our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Welcome to each of you.
Thank you.
Just remind everybody, as you answer questions and comment today, if you tried to remember to say who you are with four speakers or four guests, it gets a little difficult for the individuals who are listening. Who wants to do a little bit better job of explaining the YRBS to our listening public here?
Hi, this is Gabe Garcia, Associate Professor of Public Health. The Youth Risk Behavioral Survey is a survey conducted by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And the first time it was implemented was in 1990, but it wasn't until 1995 when Alaska first participated in the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey. So the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey asked several questions related to health risk behaviors among high school students. So this includes behavior related to tobacco use, dietary behaviors, physical activity, alcohol and drug use, sexual behaviors, and unintentional injury and violence. So those are the things that are covered in the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey.
When this was first initiated in 1990, what was the thought process behind it? Why did we want to gather this information?
Well, the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey, really, the purpose of it is to monitor health risk behaviors across the nation. And by understanding the behaviors, the risk behaviors that we have among our youth, then we are able to address this at the programmatic level in schools, in the community, et cetera. But this is really important data because if you don't have this data, it's really hard to make some sort of progress in improving the health and behaviors of our youth.
And this is Deborah. That, as you pointed out, you have to know where you are and where you've been to help decide where you want to go and how you're going to get there. And so it is so very important to have this information about our youth behaviors. And also one thing that the YRBS includes in the questions are questions about protective factors. Now, protective factors is a fancy term for what we all know or what are things that help youth do better, build resiliency, help avoid risky behaviors. And so the YRBS also asks youth to answer such questions as, do you talk to your parents every day? Or do you have another adult that you can talk to? Do you think your community supports you? And so forth. And as a result of having both these protective factor questions and risk and positive behavior questions, we can then make correlations not only between how these protective factors help youth avoid risk behaviors or how it impacts their behaviors, but also how it helps them engage in better behaviors. And that's one thing we're so excited to talk about is a study that Dr. Gabe Garcia did, which shows some of those really exciting correlations, in addition to the fact that youth are behaving increasingly better in our community.
Who gets these surveys? Which states, what age group, what percentage of each locale gets surveyed and so forth?
Right. So for the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey to be considered usable, the state's youth would have to, 60% of state youth would have to participate, 60% in the high schools. And so various high schools here in Alaska are surveyed. And the high schools that are chosen are randomly chosen. So the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey is a representative sample of Alaska. And what I have done in the study is look specifically at the Anchorage high schools.
Okay. And so these are all high school age students.
Right.
Randomly picked. People might want to know, since some of these questions might seem sensitive to them, how's the information protected?
So the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey, in order for youth to participate, parents have to actively provide the consent. And it was in 2001 when the state passed the statute that parents need to have an active consent before their children can participate in this survey. So unfortunately, if less than 60% of youth participate in this survey, then the state cannot publish those reports. So it's really important that parents get engaged and get their youth in participating in this survey, because this really helps us understand what's happening in our state in terms of our youth behaviors.
Has it been a problem to get 60% of Alaskan teenagers to do the report? And if so, why? And is it changing?
Yes, in 2001, when the active parental consent was instated, the state didn't get the 60% that they are wanting. And so the results were not published at that time. It wasn't until 2003 when we actually achieved the 60% or above of participation. And since 2003, we've had a pretty good response rate from our youth. So the states have published those results since then.
Okay. Let me remind listeners, once again, you're listening to Line One, your health connection from Anchorage, Alaska. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Our topic today is the Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance Survey. This is a survey that's done every couple of years. I think we didn't establish that, every two
right.
years or so, and looking at adolescents, basically high school age students throughout the country, and trying to get a better feel for particular behaviors that they may engage in that are often associated with poorer health outcomes. And we have not yet discussed those, but we're trying to get some ground basic information about what the survey does, how it's collected, and how that information's used. During the next hour, if you have questions, here's how you can get a hold of us. You can email me directly at line1, and you have to spell that out as one word, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call me direct at 550-8433, and if you need a toll-free number, it's 1-888-353-5752. So one thing that's going to happen is Deborah Williams is going to have to leave here a little earlier, and there is a some other bits of information that are being collected and analyzed besides the what the CDC does? And one of these is a program called AIR, is that right, Deborah? And you wanted to kind of make sure we discuss those results first.
Sure. We thought at Anchorage Youth Development Coalition and other organizations, wouldn't it be interesting to know how does Anchorage compare with the rest of the nation? And how do we compare with some key cities that are most comparable to us in terms of our youth risk behaviors and our youth positive behaviors? So we asked the American Institutes for Research, AIR, with some wonderful support from the Association of Alaska School Boards and Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and the United Way, to help us compare our results. How are our youth doing? And so we have published that, and we've published an update to that that Michael Karosky, who used to be the head of Anchorage Safe and Drug-Free Schools, helped with. And we found results better than we thought we were going to find. What we found is that in most risk behavior categories, Anchorage youth started a little higher than the national average and a little higher than some representative cities. But over the course of, 15, 20 years, in most instances now, we are better than national averages in many of these representative cities, or we're the same as national average. So, for example, we're better than national average now in Anchorage with a youth current use and first use of alcohol and tobacco. We're better than national average with respect to binge drinking. We're better than national average with respect to carried a weapon at school. That's not carried a weapon at school in this case. Or bicycle helmet use. And it goes on and on. And so, sometimes in Anchorage, we think, we don't do as well as the nation, or we don't do as well as representative cities. We know we have some exciting challenges up here. But in fact, this is one of many areas that we can celebrate. Our youth are doing well. And we like to think that a lot of the programs that our community has invested in, the social-emotional learning efforts at the Anchorage School District, the work of United Way, the work of many nonprofit organizations such as AYDC in trying to promote positive youth development, that this has had a positive impact, and the results show that we're doing quite well in Anchorage.
So the survey, if we were to look it up on the CDC website, does not necessarily, well, it may compare state to state, but it doesn't compare Anchorage to any other cities. And that's what this particular survey did. What you did is you took the YRBS information and collated it and compared it to other cities.
Right, and tracked it over time. So
there was no other questionnaire. It was all based on the same information.
Precisely. So it was just collating the information, graphing it, charting it, and looking, standing back and saying, wow, that's impressive. Good for Anchorage and good for our youth.
While I'm thinking about it, if anyone wants to look at these reports in much more detail, if you go to alaskapublic.org, find the Line 1 website page, and you will see links to the national survey and two surveys that we'll be talking about, Dr. Garcia's report and the report that Deb Williams just mentioned, and you can look at the data in much more detail. What struck me when I looked at this report, Deborah, that you were talking about is that not only are things down, there was a pretty consistent trend in some areas that I thought were important. So it wasn't just that suddenly we're a little bit better this year than last year. There's been a progressive trend in a lot of, it seems, substantial areas.
That's correct. And when we go back to Gabe and talk to him about the graphing that he did and the analysis he did, both this report and that report confirm that we've had statistically significant declines in numerous critical risk factors such as, and risk behaviors such as alcohol and tobacco and others. And they're statistically significant. Some people might say, oh, yeah, but that's all survey. What we also find is that many other things confirm this. So you go to the school district and you say, how are alcohol suspensions doing? And they'll say, way down. You look at other data, injury data, hospitalization data, and you say, how do the statistics look with respect to youth and these risk behaviors? And they'll say, down. And so it's always nice when you have a self-reporting survey instrument such as the YRBS be confirmed by these other important areas of data, because altogether we can step back and say, yep, these behaviors truly are down.
We have a caller has a question. I want to take that call right now. John, you're on line one.
Yes, thanks. I've got a couple questions. First of all, I'm really glad that Deborah Williams is involved in this. It's nice to have her energy on this type of topic. One sort of a statistical question. I'm not sure if the survey said Anchorage high schools, and does that include the alternative high schools, the ones that, for example, McLaughlin Youth Center or the Step Up program or Whaley or the Continuation School? That's the first question. And then the second one, has anyone done a financial comparison with how much, showing how much money the city of Anchorage saved by having less problems with its kids? And of course, the corollary for that would be that it makes sense to invest in our schools if that has shown these reductions in problems with kids, and we can figure out maybe how much money we save by investing in schools leading to these trends, leading to less problems further on.
Right.
I think that's enough for one call.
All right. Well, it's great, some good questions, John. Thanks for doing that.
I'm gonna hang up and listen out there.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, John. This is Gabe Garcia, Associate Professor of Public Health, and I'll answer your first question. And the analysis that I did in my research looks specifically at Anchorage traditional high schools. There are data available related to alternative high schools, but that wasn't part of the analysis.
Yes. And this is Deborah. I love your second question. We're all sitting here shaking our heads up and down. As we know, these are exciting times right now. But we also know that investments matter. And I think we're going to see if we can start quantifying the impacts of some of these reductions in risk behaviors, improvements in other behaviors. And we did pull together in the AIR study, and particularly what Michael Karosky did, what some of the investments look like in SEL with the school district and other investments in the key positive youth development programming. But I like the notion of quantifying the beneficial impact of these behavioral changes. Lovely idea.
I just sitting here thinking that is very difficult to do.
It is to me
because there's so many factors that come into play. And that's a difficulty from the legislative point of view. It would seem particularly in times of shortage and concern, is the difficulty in showing cause and effect financially. We can show cause and effect in different pretty distinct findings here, but you can we can always argue that there's what are the reasons for the decrease, or is there a decrease in cost? Is it inflation adjusted? I mean, you know, all the things that get very, very sticky from that that standpoint. But it would be nice if someone was trying to do that. It's been done in medicine, as we try to figure out why in the heck we spend so much more than every other country in the world, and yet our outcomes are decreasing compared to everybody else in the world. So it can be done. Sarah?
Yeah, this is Sarah Sledge with United Way. And we are working with United Way partners, but also through the 90% by 2020 partnership, at some of these questions about how we better use data to align our investments, but also working together as a community to increase the number of ways that we can improve outcomes for kids. So we're looking at it. It is difficult, but there's a lot of conversation about how we use data better to figure out what we invest in and how we improve the outcomes that we're getting as a community.
So how does the United Way look at this information? How do you take this information in and use it?
Well, we're really excited about the data, and we helped fund the initial study because we really wanted to see what our trends are showing about how our kids are doing. You know, a lot of our work is centered around improving outcomes for kids, making sure more of our kids are successful and prepared. And we know that a lot of these factors play into that. But we didn't want to just look at the trends. We also wanted to look at how how these how protective factors are improving the other positive behaviors that kids have and are engaging in, and how it's reducing the risk behaviors that they're engaged in. A lot of the partners that we work with are working to improve a lot of these behaviors, so we wanted to see the impact that it has, and we're really pleased with the results. We get to see how positive factors are really contributing to academic outcomes, how they're contributing to whether or not kids are attending school more frequently, and we know that those are some of the things that make sure our kids are healthy and on their way to a successful life.
Thomas Azzarella is with us also, and I haven't drug him into the conversation yet, and I'm going to do it right now. He's director of the Alaska After School Network. Same question I asked Sarah. How do you look at this information? What do you try to take away from it?
Well, this information is really helpful for us as we're kind of looking at the broader time that young people are learning. So there's definitely learning that's happening during the school day. And then during the out-of-school time hours that we're really concerned about, during those peak hours of 3 to 6, those risk hours, we know that's considered the danger zone of time frame when youth are most likely to engage in risk behaviors due to lack of supervision or lack of engagement in positive out-of-school time activities. So we're really interested in seeing, you know, how can we engage more youth in these positive activities that are growing their assets, so increasing protective factors, like connected to a community adult, being involved in a sport or a recreation program. How can we increase those type of protective factors to help reduce that risk that young people face during those kind of critical hours, again, of 3 to 6, while parents are still at work? We know across Alaska that, you know, families are really relying on community-based programs to help ensure that their kids are getting a comprehensive education, that are getting enrichment, that are getting an opportunity to develop the social and employability skills needed for the 21st workforce. And this survey really allows us to show the impact that those type of programs are having with, again, reducing risk behaviors by building those assets, by connecting more young people to positive opportunities.
Another saying popped into my mind, and I'm a little bit hesitant to say it given the current movement for a president being elected in this country, but it almost sounds like it takes a village kind of approach here. And I'm not promoting anybody. I'm just listening to what you have to say and what comes to my mind when I think about what you're saying is we're gathering information and the whole communities are taking this information and trying to make something worthwhile out of it. Yes, Deborah.
One thing that might be helpful, Thad, at this point is for your listeners to, in case they don't have the copies of the reports in front of them, just to know what some of these numbers look like. So just taking binge drinking, for example, in 2003, 25.9% of Anchorage youth, high school youth, said that they have five or more drinks in a row within a couple hours. That number is now down to 12.8%. Statistically significant decline. And so when you look at current alcohol use, back in 2003, 38.8% said that they had a drink of alcohol in the last 30 days. It's now down to 24.2%. One thing we also like to do with these numbers, because I just, you know, talked about the risk behavior, love to flip it. And so when you are at a dinner party or talking with your kids or just thinking about this in general, it's really useful to know that 75%, more than 75% of Anchorage High School kids have not had a drink in the last 30 days. The majority of youth in our community are engaged in healthy behaviors. So you look again and again and again at these numbers. It's really important to flip them. So you see, well, what percentage of youth are, in fact, not engaged in risky behavior, or rather engaged in healthy behaviors? And that is a very important way to think about our youth. And we know the positive community norms, positive social norms, do impact our behaviors. So to the extent that people understand that most Anchorage High School students don't drink, don't use marijuana, don't smoke, don't engage in other risky behaviors, it's an important message and theme for us to get out to our community.
Let me go ahead. I wanted to make a comment, but I think the most important thing, because we're coming up on our break, is I'm going to take one more phone call, and then I'll come back with my question. Brenda, you're on line one.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to know if you're going to do the survey in any other place besides Anchorage, and I'll hang up and listen to the answer on the radio. Thank you very
much. All right,
and you're
calling from Deering?
Yes.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Hi, this is Gabe Garcia, and to answer your question, the high schools are randomly chosen by the State Department who conducts the survey. So it really depends on how schools are randomly chosen. Anchorage high schools are usually chosen because Anchorage represent a bigger population, and so that's usually what ends up happening when they collect samples for these surveys.
So what you're saying is the official CDC surveys that have been going on since 1990 and since 1995, Alaska's been involved in with some exceptions, that information is random high schools throughout each state, but what we're talking about to a great degree here is a subset of that data that basically just looks at Anchorage schools. So those of you listening outside of the Anchorage area, you can get the information for the state. You may not get the information for Deering High School if that was one of the high schools chosen, and you'd have to go to the CDC website to see if there's information. But theoretically, any community could do a similar kind of analysis. Is that right?
Right.
Yeah. So if you are interested, somebody could take a look. And so, Deborah, this information that the American Institute of Research helped you gather compares Alaska data with other states. And one thing maybe you didn't say is I'm looking at the 2011 data on a brief slide here, and there's only a few things we were really worse at, and the cities that this compared was like, I want to say San Diego, Minneapolis, I can't remember the cities, and we were far better in what we were, the kinds of behaviors we're looking at in the vast majority, with some about the same.
Exactly, and if you go to the very next page of the report, you'll see that we did that for 2013.
Okay.
And voila, by the time Anchorage is in 2013, we are same as or better than in every single category.
Yeah, we weren't worse than. I missed that.
Exactly.
So in the next one, there was none that we were worse than.
None that we were worse than.
So there are statistics, and then there are statistics. I mean, but these are impressive kinds of data, it would seem to me. Gabe, you're the science guy here. Are you impressed or do you think this is valid information? Let me just ask it that way.
Well, I think this is impressive information and valid information. And we are really happy to see that we are seeing the statistically significant decline in a lot of the risk behaviors among our youth. That includes alcohol use and several others. And so we are really happy to see those.
And this is Thomas. I just want to respond to the caller's request, too. So we are seeing these trends happening across Alaska and across the nation. We're seeing youth engaging in more positive behaviors, reducing the amount of risk that they're engaging with. We have one of our healthiest generations that is growing up right now in the United States and here in Alaska, and specifically here in Anchorage. It's something really great to celebrate. We do have our highest graduation rate ever in the country. We've hit 80% graduation across the country if you look at the average score. We're seeing risk factors again drop lower than they have ever previously been measured. And we're seeing protective factors again engaging at a higher level. So I just wanted to connect that to that we are seeing a positive trends at differing amounts throughout the country and Alaska.
Yeah. So what I hear you saying is a very good one. This is not just that Anchorage should be patting themselves on the back, although they've made statistically greater headway, it would appear to me, that throughout the country we're making that headway. And these kinds of headways, to put things in a little bit better perspective, is everybody knows that we're living longer in all Western countries. Alaska or America is not the most long living. In fact, we're dropping a little bit relative to other countries, although we're all living longer. So we also still have some work to do. Mm-hmm. And why and how these behaviors affect length of time people are living is that if you engage in behaviors that are risky, you're more likely to have death or mortality or chronic disease. Which affects lifespan, and so, so anyway, that's what's important for everybody to understand. This is good for all of us.
The great part about this YBRS survey is, again, as we're seeing those trends go down, we know long-term public health is improving. When we can help young people choose better behaviors early on in life, where they're still in their beginning phase, blueprinting how they're going to make decisions later in life, if we can reduce that risk behavior early on in young people, we know they're more likely to succeed as they grow up. A young person who doesn't engage in early substance use, such as alcohol use, marijuana use, or other drug use, is less likely to engage in that behavior when they're older as an adult and make better, more appropriate decisions along the way.
All right. Time has come for us to take our mid-break segue. Deborah Williams is going to leave us at this particular time. Deborah, be careful out there.
This was great. But see, I know teens are driving more safely, so I feel even more comfortable on the road.
All right. So let me remind everyone, you're listening to Line 1, your health connection. Our local number is 550-8433. The toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. Our email, line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a very short break and continue our discussion of the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey, Surveillance Survey. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, your health connection from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1, your health connection on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
All right, welcome back. This is Line 1, your health connection, originating from KSKA Studios in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Our topic today is the Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance Survey. This was developed in 1990 by the CDC to monitor health risk behaviors and that seem to contribute markedly to death, disability, and social problems, particularly among youth and adults. These behaviors are often established during early childhood and adolescence, and they include things like behaviors that contribute to unintentional injury and violence, sexual behaviors that contribute to unintended pregnancy and sexually transmitted infections, which also include HIV and AIDS, alcohol and other drug use, tobacco use, unhealthy dietary behaviors, inadequate physical activity. Our guests for this one half hour include Dr. Gabe Garcia. He's Associate Professor of Public Health at UAA in the Department of Health Services. Sarah Sledge, she's Director of Education Operations for the United Way. And also Tom Azzarella, he is Director of the Alaska After School Network. If you've got questions or comments about what we've talked about so far, anything you hear in the rest of the program, three ways to get a hold of us. You can email me direct over the next 20 minutes or so. And that email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Our direct phone number is 550-8433. And you can call toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. Before we get back into the program, I did promise to do one public service announcement, which I think is important. Mark West, who is the assistant district commissioner for the Eagle Scouts, is trying to put together a couple of groups of Boy Scouts that are particularly boys who have disabilities. And the group of individuals they are looking for include individuals with high-functioning autism, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, individuals with other learning disabilities or intellectual disabilities, and even developmental disabilities. One group in particular with these disabilities, they're looking for children and boys first through fifth grade, and then another group, boys 11 through years of age through 17 years of age. If you are interested in knowing more about that, let me give you a phone number. It is 907-529-7051, 907-529-7051. And that's Mark West, who's looking for boys with disabilities who might want to have the Cub Scout or Boy Scout experience. All right. So, Dr. Garcia, let's talk about your study. And I want to just take a second to summarize what we've talked about so far is where the CDC and how the CDC has developed a survey that's been used since 1990 to look at these risk behaviors. And we've looked at one survey that took a subset of that information related to Anchorage, Alaska teens and compared it to several other cities and saw some impressive and important results, not only in what we're doing or what's happening in Alaska, but what's happening in other cities as well. What did you do? What did you do different with this data?
So I looked at protective factors. And when I mean by protective factors, there are eight that we looked at. That's related to family support and engagement, supportive adult relationships, meaningful opportunities, community support and environment, and school environment. These are external developmental youth assets that are important in youth development. So we looked at that, and we did some correlation analysis looking at risk behaviors, including alcohol use, substance use, marijuana use, suicide ideation, and academic factors such as missing school and academic achievement. So those are the things that I looked at in my study. And what I found in the study was that, you know, as you increase the number of protective factors among youth, the less likely the youth use alcohol, the less likely the youth engage in risk behaviors such as marijuana use, or even suicide ideation. So, and the important finding also is that if youth have more, you know, three or more protective factors, they're less likely to do those risk behaviors. And fortunately, among our Anchorage high schools, most of them have, you know, more than three protective factors, helping them prevent those risk behaviors.
So one of the questions I had in my mind, I was starting to talk about a minute ago before the break, was why are we seeing these results? And I'm not talking about just Anchorage in Alaska, but across the country. And, you know, it'd be nice to think it's all because we took this data and we tried to do something with it. Is there a bigger framework going on? Is there a bigger understanding of need that this just documents? Is there kind of a pretty clear understanding of what we need to be doing that's just finally being done because we saw we had a problem?
So Sarah? This is Sarah from United Way. There's been a movement across the country for a few decades now, developmental assets out of Search Institute, and it's something that the Anchorage community really took a hold of a couple of decades ago in our community to see how can we increase the number of developmental assets our kids have and really work in a concerted way to increase these in our community and really champion positive youth development in our community. And that work was carried out through a lot of community partners, through the Anchorage Youth Development Coalition, through service partners of United Way, and through the school district to really see what we could do to increase these factors for our kids. And the theory of change has always been there. If more of our kids have these protective factors and these assets, then we expect that they will show a decrease in these risk behaviors and an increase in positive behaviors. They'll do better in school. More of them will graduate. So with this study that Gabe did for the last two rounds of the YRBS data, it really showed us that the theory is correct, that we, as we increase the number of protective factors that our kids have, they actually do better. And so what we as a community need to do is make sure that we continue to make sure our kids have those factors. So one of the things that we looked at was when kids say that they have an adult that cares about them, or do they volunteer in the community, or do they feel like the community cares about them? And each one of those things has a correlation to an increase in positive behaviors. So we know that whether or not kids are doing well doesn't just come from the family, doesn't just come from what's happening in school, but it comes from what the community is doing to support them. So there is a role for all of us to play. And I think we should congratulate ourselves, celebrate a little bit about how hard we've worked as a community to improve things for our kids and acknowledge that there's still work to do.
And this is Thomas with Alaska After School Network. One of the very unique parts that makes this really an amazing research study that Dr. Garcia did is the fact that, so in Anchorage, the Anchorage Youth Development Coalition has been a recipient of a federal SAMHSA grant that's a drug-free community grant, really looking at what can we do to reduce, again, the risk behavior of youth engaged in alcohol and marijuana use. We've taken a very unique approach. We're one of the only communities across the United States that has taken this approach of looking at how can we increase developmental assets. So again, what can I do to increase those things that help young people succeed, connection to meaningful opportunities like after-school programs, supportive adults? What can I do to help a young person build a sense of competency and self-worth? So how have we been able to see that long-term play out over the last decade is really amazing, that with this amount of funding coming in from the federal government, we've been able to leverage it locally, both with public and private dollars. We've been able to engage community members across the city of Anchorage and really come together and look at what can we do to work to develop young people instead of seeing young people as a problem to be fixed or solved, but see our young people here in Anchorage as an asset to grow and develop. And that's, I think, one of the most unique things and really compelling things that this research shows is that this technique and approach has really worked here in the Anchorage area.
What I see, and I'm sitting from a perspective as a physician who also is very interested in where we are with healthcare in this country because of my position as a physician, and having talked over the last almost 20 years now with healthcare economists both nationally and in Alaska, is helping people understand where our healthcare costs are coming from. So I see this in a much bigger perspective, and I just want to take a second to ask you all if this seems right from your perspective, because it's something we have to grapple with nationally and understand if we're going to continue to make this headway. And that's that, again, we are spending, without question, far more on health care than any other country in the world. That's almost a given. And then when you look at our outcomes over time, they are actually worsening a little bit over time relative to the rest of the world. So suggest strongly that the amount of money we spend in health care is not the answer to everybody's the population health of the United States. Then if you look at other countries spending on social issues compared to the United States, they all outspend us. So we spend a lot on health care, very little on social issues, and yet our results are getting worse. And so what I see all of this effort is the realization that we need to take a look at socioeconomic factors, social factors, which are leading to problems that are outside the ability of the classic healthcare system to handle. Drug abuse, car accidents while you're drunk driving, all those problems related to alcohol or drug abuse that by the time they get into the healthcare system, the damage has been done. How that affects offspring. So that's how I look at this. I think it's an awakening of the realization that we can't keep spending the kind of money that we're spending on health care, and we need to reallocate that to other issues. I am not saying we are not good at treating cancer. We are very good at treating cancer. We're very good at treating high-intensity problems. We're not so good at chronic disease. We're not so good at preventing unwanted pregnancies. We're not so good at preventing alcohol and drug abuse, and those are causing significant problems in the country. Again, if you got comments, this is the time to do it. Toll-free number 1-888-353-5752. Our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org, and our local number 550-8433. Sarah, were you itching to say something?
Well, I was just thinking about what you were saying. You know, when people graduate from high school, they earn more money over their lifetime. They have better access to health care, and they have healthier outcomes over the course of their life. And so we know that that's an important milestone for them to achieve that's going to lead to healthier outcomes over the course of their life. And then through this study, we can see the different things that help kids graduate from high school and really increase the chance that they have healthier behaviors. And so, you know, it's really significant to me to know that whether or not a youth agrees that they feel they matter to people in our community has an impact on whether or not they are getting A's and B's in school, or whether they attend regularly, or if they're engaging in these risky behaviors that might take them off track. And so that, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. I know that our numbers for how many kids believe they matter to the community could be a lot better. And so that tells me that we have work to do. If we're going to do this, we need to come together as a community and make sure more of our kids know we care about them, and that we are supporting them and making sure they're successful and prepared.
Dr. Garcia, what in your mind in the study you did are the most significant? What jumps out as you at, maybe remarkable success, or at least the worthwhile discussing successes? Deborah Williams talked about some of the things with the AIR study. What did you find?
So I mentioned that there are eight protective factors that I looked at, the resiliency factors among youth. And what is interesting that I found is that for every 1 unit of increase for those protective factors, youth are 15% less likely to currently drink alcohol, 16% less likely to binge drink, 20% less likely to currently smoke marijuana, 16% less likely to miss class without permission, and 9% less likely to be bullied in school. So it's really, you know, interesting, and I'm glad to know that all of these things that we are doing here in Anchorage, in the community level, in the schools, and in our homes, are making an impact to prevent youth from risky behaviors, such as I mentioned.
So tell us again, enumerate a couple of these protective factors, very succinct ones that you were looking at.
So we looked at parental in support for youth. And so the Youth Risk Behavioral asked students who had at least one parent to talk with them about what they were doing in school. So simple things like that. What do parents do? Do the parents actually talk to their kids about school? Another question, or another protective factor that is covered in the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey, is asking the students whether they feel comfortable seeking help from at least one adult besides their parents. So it looks at a supportive adult relationships. And looks at also meaningful opportunities, whether they volunteer in their community, whether they engage in extracurricular activities in their schools, and whether the community supports them. So we're glad that the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey asked those questions, because those are the types of factors that, you know, United Way and Thomas in his organization are working on.
We're about 10 minutes left. If you've got questions about the survey or the comments you've heard today, let me give you a couple of ways to get a hold of us. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. Our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org, and our local number, 550-8433. So a couple of tougher questions then. Everything can't be rosy. Where are the problems? Where are the areas that are not seeing as much success? Either in the AIR study, the CDC's YRBS, or your study?
Well, we're not seeing a lot of movement in terms of students getting involved in volunteer work. So we could improve that a little bit more. You know, we need to make sure that youth get involved in volunteering. There is a decline in terms of every use of marijuana and current marijuana use, but it's not a significant decrease. So that is something that we can work on to further decrease.
I remember that looking at the data, and you guys square me up about this. Obesity, activity, weight are still significant issues and will probably over time contribute considerably to healthcare costs, but they are not particularly all healthcare issues. People may not appreciate this either, but a lot of obesity is related to psychosocial anxieties and stresses in the community and in the house, not just overeating because you like to overeat. So it gets back to these social issues. Comments?
You know, this is Thomas with Alaska After School Network. I think really what we're seeing in regards to things such as obesity rates and substance use, we're really interested in tackling these issues. These are not a one-time fix problems. You know, community alcohol use, you know, obesity, those are long-term investments that we have to make early on in prevention of programs and in our youth to help them succeed. We will never be able to wave a magical wand in this community and change our issues that we have with chronic inebriates. We won't be able to wave our magic wand and just magically overnight change our obesity issues. What it's going to take is us really as a community continuing to come together and keep advancing the work together. Mm-hmm. What that means is an investment, both financially, but it also means an investment of our time. Just like Dr. Garcia was saying, you know, some of the most basic level of protective factors that we can do as a community is talking to our kids, making sure that we're talking to them each day. How is school today? You know, what's going on? Who are your friends right now? You know, how are you feeling? Engaging young people that way. And for us as community members, when we see a young person, that we're engaging that young person. We're saying hello. We're smiling at them as we're walking on the street. Those are basic small investments that we can do of our time that take nothing out of our pockets that help young people succeed. And those are things that contribute to improved social behaviors, improved mental health, and ultimately to those kind of reductions in things such as substance use and obesity.
And I'd just like to add that we have to be patient because behavior takes time to change. And so we have to keep on investing now and not wait. You know, we have to wait to see those changes. And we've made a lot of good investments in the past decade or so. And so we're seeing the investments that we made are paying off right now.
We talked a little bit beforehand of a comment I shared that I heard when I was out for a recent training at Los Angeles Children's Hospital, and it revolved around what we need to be doing for obesity. And the individual I was talking with said, we need to keep people busy. We need to keep kids busy. We can't let them sit around at home play video games and not be active and while they're not busy eating poorly nutrition-wise. And it made me think about, Thomas, what you were saying is the same handles goes with this after-school stuff, is having activities, venues, safe places for kids to be active and engaged in other things that might interest them. And it would help not only from a weight and eating standpoint, it may help from just all the protective factors that it seems like Gabe has been mentioning to us.
Well, you know, it's really interesting that you brought that up. So what we've just had a new release of some research data. It's called Kids on the Move, Alaska After 3 p.m. It's really looking at the physical activity level of kids during the out-of-school time hours between 3 to 6. We know here in Alaska, across the whole state, we have over 25,000 youth who are engaged in after-school and out-of-school time activities during that critical hours, again, of 3 to 6, when youth are most likely to engage in risk behaviors. Unfortunately, what we also know is that there's a wait list right now of about 45,000 kids across Alaska that would like to be in an after-school or out-of-school time activity that can't be because either one's not available in their community, it's cost too much, there's a wait list, or they don't have transportation to get there. And unfortunately, if we can't get more access to those kids to get engaged in healthy pro-social behaviors, they're missing that opportunity to develop. And what this Kids on the Move survey found is that kids who are in programs are more likely to be physically active and to be getting access to the nutrition they need to help them succeed. So if we can get more kids engaged in positive pro-social activities like Boys and Girls Club, like this Boy Scout troop that you're advertising earlier, like Girl Scouts, Campfire, Native Dance Group, summer is coming up and it's a critical time we need to get young people engaged. We're going to again see a reduction in risk behaviors, and those long-term community impacts are going to pay off.
I can't help in the last couple of minutes we got here as a pediatrician to make one more comment, and that is that it seems to me, from what I understand, is although this is really wonderful information, great to hear, that the earlier we get involved in children's emotional and social behavioral health, the better. There's a lot of information showing that first 3 years sets down patterns that it's like you want to teach somebody how to play golf, you better teach them how to play right the first time, and the first time is birth to three. So I want to throw a plug in there that we might even get more bang for a buck if we're doing the same kind of things early in life.
And this survey, really what the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey tracks is everything that's been happening from birth into the time that that young person's in high school.
Good point.
When we're seeing when young people are filling out this anonymous survey, again, there's no indicator that says who is taking the survey. When they're reporting that, they're reporting on what's been happening for the last 14 to 18 years of their life. So we know that investment early on in a child's life from birth to three is a critical piece of this component. Investing through early childhood and early adolescence and continuing that investment in adolescence into early adulthood is important. Because again, if we want long-term impact in our community, we want to reduce substance use, we want to reduce mortality rates, we want to improve public health, by reducing diabetes, cancer, obesity, we need to invest early on in young people. And this survey really allows us to see how our investment's doing by the time that young person is at the tail end of their public education.
Great summary. Did you write that all down? Or?
I wish. This is recorded, right?
Any other final comments? We're in just the last couple of minutes. Anybody, any other things they want to say to wrap up?
Well, I just wanted to say that it's really important for all of us to get involved in the life of youth. And all of us can play a role as parents, as mentors, or even as community members. So we all have the opportunity to make a difference in the youth's lives.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Sarah.
Oh, well, you can go to 90by2020.org and find some ways to get involved. And it truly does take the whole community to pull together to make sure our kids succeed.
Yeah, and I would just like to thank all the parents, too, who have checked that they're allowing their child to participate in the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey. This is anonymous information. It's nothing collected about the student's name or birthday. This allows us, again, to help monitor the health of our community. And the more young people we have engaged taking the survey, the better information we have about our community so we can continue making better investments in our community and advancing our health.
It'll give us a baseline. We're going to go through an experiment with marijuana, and we'll be able to look back and see if there's been changes for a number of years based on that, too. So it gives us some way to gauge public health or public decisions and making in legislative decisions. So my thanks to Dr. Gabe Garcia, Sarah Sledge, Thomas Azzarella, and Deborah Williams for their comments today and making us aware of the Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance Survey. If you'd like to know more about this, you can join the conversation on KSK on Facebook, and you can get that link at www.alaskapublic.org. You can also find our Line 1 archives at that same location. Our topic next week is the use of ionizing radiation to treat cancer. The guest is Dr. Larry Doherty. He's Director of Radiation Oncology for the Alaska Cancer Treatment Center here in Anchorage. So why not tune into your health and learn more next Monday, April 20th at 2 p.m. Pat Yak is Chief Content Officer at Alaska Public Media. Dave Waldron was our audio engineer today. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.